So, any questions? Fine dining. How about you? That's not exactly the question I had in mind. No, we're going to go through suffering to the next experience. Yeah, the idea for tonight's selections following up from last week is to show how the emptiness is followed by a descent, an affirmation of the divine. So I'm just going to read a couple of sections that show that. And transition now more into mantra. So one of the questions I had in mind was, have you heard anything new? We've been here for 8 weeks with Savitri. We have 3 more to go after this one. And all of this material has been quite familiar to me, but it's been nice to have an opportunity to present it. I've never presented in such a continuous way this material. And I think it has been nice for me to be able to do that. But I'm wondering if you have heard anything new that you didn't already know. Last week, I just reviewed a couple of previous sessions, and the response to you, my response to you, was quite an elaborate explanation of Savitri, and that was really good. That was a good question, and it led to a quite detailed explanation which I've never heard before. I mean, it's. But when have you been? Have you read Savitri?
Partially, a little bit. Just my beginning.
Is anybody reading Savitri now?
Normally, in life.
From time to time.
I mean, is anyone reading Savitri?
I read it always now, nearly every day.
And
I translate it also.
So
every morning, half an hour, 20 years.
So has this series had any impact on that experience of reading Savitri?
Yes. I've participated in different readings, and the first time when you started reading Savitri, I think that was the most energetic one for me. Mm-hmm. It took me in this dynamic, in this magic of this book.
But has that affected the way you read and what you hear?
Oh, yes, also.
That's really what I'm asking.
And also, as I say, I translate some parts to understand better. And also there are gaps that close. even if you try to translate them, and there are some gaps that you cannot fill in, or I cannot fill in my proper language. It's very, very interesting. And for me, for instance, reading from the very beginning, reading a savagery was seeing a man who is writing it. I didn't hear anything about it. But I see the man, I see his character, I see what he's thinking, and he's always present. Why I read? I see something behind this, and his message. It's very strong. It's for savagery, I come back.
Peut-être nous sentir un livre que j'espère que vous pouvez barrer à ma table une voix qui se voyait au cerveau. That means the concrete knowledge about every soul. And Mother, do all of Savitri in your world, in our service. It was that when I listened in Savitri Vavan Sunday, 69, Mother, tell about the first book on which Rodrigo explained the first emanation. It's very, very, very interesting. Never I listen to Mother explain in English.
Have you heard Nalini's reading of her words about Savitri?
Yeah.
Is that what? Because there
it's
is
very
a.
Very interesting. And Kelly gave me many questions about Savitri, and he tell me your synthesis with a champagne. You find the. It's just my exercise. He's my teacher. That's all.
There's about an hour long recording of Nalini. Reading from notes that were taken by him and Mona,
yeah,
of the mother speaking about Savitri,
yeah,
and it was not something that was authorized for general distribution, but in fact it's quite available, and it's full of amazing statements that she purportedly made about Savitri, which are different from other statements which have appeared, you know, in different places. So that's an interesting thing to be aware of,
yeah,
that it exists. And she says, for example, in that commentary, for example, Savitri, she said, would be enough to take you all the way to the highest realization. Savitri alone would be enough. But she doesn't qualify it, she doesn't elaborate on how one would make that use of Savitri, but she does say that it has that power.
But it's very interesting what you said about the presence of Schrödinger. In the beginning, not really from me, but now, it's incredible. Very, very, very strong. Sometimes it's difficult for me to read. But I have some experience. I read again and again, but never said.
Anyway,
another level of mind.
One of the things that
that
was expressed last week was the idea that understanding the structure and the meaning and whatever we understand about Savitri is still not Savitri. No amount of understanding is equal to what Savitri actually is. And the words on the page are not what Savitri actually is.
Actually.
Savitri is not the words on the page. The words on the page are merely a link, a way to make a connection with Savitri. Savitri is a power and a rhythm and a work, an energy, a way of seeing. And Savitri is the power to conquer death. So one of the things that we should understand at some point in our reading of Savitri is that Savitri is that power to conquer death. It's not about the conquest of death by some mythical being. But in order to have that understanding, it means that you really work with the mantra. My question was, are there any questions? And this is an interesting pursuit, you know, because any practice, any real guru-ordained spiritual practice is something that is acquired over a period of time. And one can study sutras and listen to teachings and be a devotee for a long time before one enters into the practice. And I think that must be a universal law. Time, it takes time. Savitri hasn't been known for a very long time. It's a recent phenomenon, and it has a future. It has a history that hasn't yet happened.
Plant
example is looking first, this is like a message. It has roots, it has from where it grew up. Altogether it has a meaning. All Vedic knowledge we have studied. And this is now just fresh grace.
So do you remember just about 20 minutes back, or a half an hour back, when we were reading about the Vajra, the fear of the lightning, the erect lightning force? That experience, that reality, what was being spoken about in the Upanishad, is the same thing. And so the mantra can invoke that lightning, and it is fearful. It's not dangerous, but it is so unusual that it brings to your awareness a kind of infinity of power that you're normally not exposed to or open to, and to integrate that. The experience that I had with the mother in the body was that it seemed to me that there were bolts of light coming from that body, and you could actually see them. You know, it was like the space around her was full of these pulsations of energy, and they were perceptible, but so silent, so cool, and yet so brilliant, that there you could perceive a different kind of energy being generated by a body, or through passing through a body. So the human body is capable. I mean, you know, we're made of hydrogen atoms, and we know that those can be exploded. The amount of force in the atoms of the body is something that we don't comprehend. Because we are organized vitally, and that we use energy, we metabolize energy for certain purposes at a level that's appropriate to those purposes. But we have the potential to metabolize energy for other purposes of a different sort. And so in yoga, there is, in the science of yoga, there is also an understanding of all the different levels of energy that can be expressed. So the theme tonight is the theme of the void, but as we ended last time, we were playing with the idea that there is something that Sri Aurobindo has identified as the void of the Supreme. God's void, God's emptiness. And I believe this was also the idea in the Upanishad that we were just reading. That state of energy and consciousness which death teaches Nachiketas, that immortality in the body. Seems, according to Savitri, to be a particular relationship between emptiness and power. There is a power of emptiness, and that power is everything. The all, consciousness of the all, is only possible with an absolute of stillness and an absolute of energy in some incomprehensible balance. So that the nature of the divine is the void. But it is the luminous divine void. That holds everything in its temporal unfolding, but it's timeless in itself. So I believe that Sri Aurobindo communicates this idea in a very tangible way. When it becomes tangible, then you have the experience of it. The power of mantra is the power to communicate that experience. And that's exactly how the mantra has been used in the tradition, in the Hindu and Buddhist traditions of mantra, are those traditions which transmit experiences like that through the word, through the vibratory frequencies that are set up by a certain kind of speech, which comes from the void. And so there was an image last time in what we were reading of something like that. So I'll just make the transition from here to there, and then see where we're led in the following portion. I wonder if you would like to put the microphone on that table. Do you think it would be better if it was on the small table? Because it really vibrates a lot. So we heard last week, several examples of the method of the void. So I'll read two selections tonight which begin with that emptiness and transition into the affirmation of the divine as a passage. An impersonal emptiness walked and spoke in her. An impersonal emptiness walked and spoke in her. A zero circle of being's totality, it used her speech and acted in her acts. It was beauty in her limbs, life in her breath, the original mystery wore her human face. Thus was she lost within to separate self. Her mortal ego perished in God's night. Impassive, the body claimed not its own voice, but let the luminous greatness through it pass. A dual power at being's occult poles still acted, nameless and invisible. Her divine emptiness was their instrument. Inconscient nature dealt with the world it had made, and using still the body's instruments, slipped through the conscious void she had become. The superconscient mystery through that void missioned its word to touch the thoughts of men. there is this idea that nature in us can act while we are in the consciousness of the vast and the void. This is the height of the Sankhya movement of the impersonal Purusha, liberated from attachment to senses and body and life, while senses and body and life continue to operate according to their principles. This is the transitional state that Sri Aurobindo insists upon as a necessity. Before the higher Purusha, the Parampurusha, can be experienced, there has to be this separation of Purusha and Prakriti. And Prakriti has to be able to continue to channel the movements of nature while Purusha is completely detached. But now the unmoving, wide, spiritual space in which her mind survived, tranquil and bare, admitted a traveler from the cosmic breaths. A thought came through, draped as an outer voice. It called not for the witness of the mind. It spoke not to the hushed, receiving heart. It came direct to the pure perception's seat, an only center now of consciousness, if center could be where all seemed only space. No more shut in by body's walls and gates, her being a circle without circumference, already now surpassed all cosmic bounds, and more spread into infinity. This being was its own unbounded world, a world without form or feature or circumference or circumstance. It had no ground, no wall, no roof of thought, yet saw itself and looked on all around in a silence motionless and illimitable. There was no person there, no centered mind, no seat of feeling on which beat events or objects wrought and shaped reactions stress. There was no motion in this inner world. All was a still and even infinity. In her, the unseen, the unknown, waited his hour. Remember that line, for when we transfer to the other similar passages from Aswapati's experience. There's a perfect parallel between this canto and the House of the Spirit. Both of these are cantos that lead from the emptiness into the emergence of the psychic being in its identity with the world. But now she sat by sleeping Satyavan, awake within, and the enormous night surrounded her with the unknown's vast. Oh, sorry. I better pick up the book here. But now she sat by sleeping Satyavan, awake within, and the enormous night surrounded her with the unknowable's vast. A voice began to speak from her own heart that was not hers, yet mastered thought and sense. As it spoke, all changed within her and without. All was, all lived. She felt all being one. The world of unreality ceased to be. There was no more a universe built by mind, convicted as a structure or a sign. A spirit, a being, saw created things and cast itself into unnumbered forms, and was what it saw and made. All now became an evidence of one stupendous truth, a truth in which negation had no place, a being and a living consciousness, a stark and absolute reality. When I get to the end of the page, you can make a little make a sign and I'll change it. There the unreal could not find a place. The sense of unreality was slain. There all was conscious, made of the infinite, all had a substance of eternity. Yet this was the same, indecipherable. It seemed to cast from it universe like a dream, vanishing forever into an original void. But this was no more some vague, ubiquitous point, or a cipher of vastness in unreal naught. It was the same, but now no more seemed far to the living clasp of her recovered soul. It was herself. It was the self of all. It was the reality of existing things. It was the consciousness of all that lived and felt and saw. It was timelessness and time. It was the bliss of formlessness and form. It was all love and the one beloved's arms. It was sight and thought in one all-seeing mind. It was joy of being on the peaks of God. She passed beyond time into eternity. She passed beyond time into eternity, slipped out of space, and became the infinite. Her being rose into unreachable heights and found no end of its journey in the self. It plunged into the unfathomable deeps and found no end to the silent mystery that held all world within one lonely breast, yet harbored all creation's multitudes. She was all vastness and one measureless point. She was a height beyond heights, a depth beyond depths. She lived in the everlasting and was all. She lived in the everlasting and was all that harbors death and bears the wheeling hours. All contraries were true in one huge spirit, surpassing measure, change, and circumstance. An individual, one with cosmic self, in the heart of the transcendence miracle and the secret of world personality, was the creator and the lord of all. Mind was a single, innumerable look upon himself and all that he became. Life was his drama and the vast a stage. The universe was his body, God its soul. All was one single, immense reality. All its innumerable phenomenon. Her spirit saw the world as living God. It saw the one and knew that all was he. She knew him as the Absolute's self-space, one with herself and ground of all things here in which the world wanders seeking for the truth, guarded behind its face of ignorance. She followed him through the march of endless time. All nature's happenings were events in her. The heartbeats of the cosmos were her own. All beings thought and felt and moved in her. She inhabited the vastness of the world. Its distances were her nature's boundaries, its closenesses her own life's intimacies. Her mind became familiar with its mind. Its body was her body's larger frame in which she lived and knew herself in it, one, multitudinous in its multitudes. She was a single being, yet all beings. She was a single being, yet all things. The world was her spirit's wide circumference. The thoughts of others were her intimates, their feelings close to her universal heart, their bodies, her many bodies, kin to her. She was no more herself, but all the world. Out of the infinitude, out of the infinitudes all came to her, into the infinitudes sentient she spread. Infinity was her own natural home. Infinity was her own natural home. Nowhere she dwelt, her spirit was everywhere. The distant constellations wheeled round her. Earth saw her born. All worlds were her colonies. The greater worlds of life and mind were hers. All nature reproduced her in its lines. Its movements were large copies of her own. She was the single self of all these selves. She was in them, and they were all in her. This first was an immense identity in which her own identity was lost. What seemed herself was an image of the whole. She was a subconscious life of tree and flower, the outbreak of the honeyed buds of spring. She burned in the passion and splendor of the rose. She was the red heart of the passion flower, the dream white of the lotus in its pool. Out of the subconscious life, she climbed to mind. She was thought and the passion of the world's heart. She was the Godhead hid in the heart of man. She was the climbing of his soul to God. The cosmos flowered in her. She was its bed. She was time and the dreams of God in time. She was space and the wideness of his days. From this she rose, where time and space were not. The superconscient was her native air. Infinity was her movement's natural space. Eternity looked out from her on time. She was time and the dreams of God in time. She was space and the wideness of his days. From this she rose where time and space were not. The superconscient was her native air. Infinity was her movement's natural space. Eternity looked out from her on time. I'm going to move now to Aswapati's Yoga, page 317. In the unapproachable stillness of his soul, intense, one-pointed, monumental, lone, patient he sat, like an incarnate hope, motionless on a pedestal of prayer. This is the image from the Upanishad earlier. This is the stillness of the one-pointed flame. A strength he sought that was not yet on earth. Help from a power too great for mortal will. The light of a truth now only seen afar. Ascension from his high omnipotent source. But from the appalling heights there stooped no voice. The timeless lids were closed. No opening came. A neutral, helpless void oppressed the years. And thought, potent no more, sank, large and pale, like a tired god into mysterious seas. The robes of mortal thinking were cast down, leaving his knowledge bare to absolute sight. Fate's driving ceased. And nature's sleepless spur, the athlete heavings of the will were stilled in the omnipotent's unmoving peace. Life in his members lay down, vast and mute. Naked, unwalled, unterrified, it bore the immense regard of immortality. The last movement died, and all at once grew still. A weight that was the unseen transcendence hand laid on his limbs, the spirit's measureless seal. Infinity swallowed him into shoreless trance. Empty grew nature's wide community. All things were brought back to their formless seed. The world was silent for a cyclic hour. Although the afflicted nature he had left maintained beneath him her broad, numberless fields, her enormous act, receding, failed, remote, as if a soulless dream at last had ceased. No voice came down from the high silences. None answered from her desolate solitudes. A stillness of cessation reigned. The wide, immortal hush before the gods are born. A universal force awaited, mute, the veiled transcendence ultimate decree. So we have in both of these cantos the house of the spirit and the cosmic consciousness. The cosmic spirit and cosmic consciousness. This prelude of interminable silence, followed by the breaking in of the whole, the breaking out of the one. I can't bridge these two pages, so I'll just jump. Then, suddenly, there came a downward look, as if a sea exploring its own depths, a living oneness widened at its core and joined him to unnumbered multitudes. A bliss, a light, a power, a flame-white love. Caught all into a soul immense embrace. Existence found its truth on oneness's breast, and each became the self and space of all. The great world rhythms were heartbeats of one soul. To feel was a flame discovery of God. All mind was a single harp of many strings, all life a song of many meeting lives. For worlds were many, but the self was one. This knowledge now was made a cosmos's seed. This seed was cased in the safety of the light. It needed not a sheath of ignorance. Then from the trance of that tremendous clasp, and from the throbbings of that single heart, and from the naked spirit's victory, a new and marvelous creation rose. Incalculable outflowing infinitudes, laughing out an unmeasured happiness, lived their innumerable unity. Worlds where the being is unbound and wide, bodied unthinkably the egoless self. Rapture of beatific energies, joined time to the timeless, poles of a single joy. White vasts were seen where all is wrapped in all. There were no contraries, no sundered parts. All by spiritual links were joined to all and bound indissolubly to the One. Each was unique, but took all lives as his own. And following out these tones of the infinite, recognized in himself the universe. A splendid center of infinity's whirl, pushed to its zenith's height, its last expanse, felt the divinity of its own self-bliss, repeated in its numberless other selves. It took up tirelessly into its scope persons and figures of the impersonal, as if prolonging in a ceaseless count, in a rapturous multiplication sum, the recurring decimals of eternity. None was apart, none lived for himself alone. Each lived for God in him and God in all. Each soulness inexpressibly held the whole. Their oneness was not tied to monotone. It showed a thousand aspects of itself. Its calm, immutable stability upbore on a changeless ground, forever safe, compelled to a spontaneous servitude, the ever-changing, incalculable steps, the seeming reckless dance's subtle plan of immense world forces in their perfect play. Appearance looked back to its hidden truth, and made of difference oneness's smiling play. It made all persons fractions of the unique, yet all were beings secret integers. All struggle was turned to a sweet strife of love in the harmonized circle of a sure embrace. Identities reconciling happiness gave a rich security to difference. On a meeting line of hazardous extremes, the game of games was played to its breaking point, where, through self-finding, by divine self-loss, there leaps out unity's supreme delight, whose blissful undivided sweetness feels a communality of the absolute. There was no sob of suffering anywhere. Experience ran from point to point of joy. Bliss was the pure, undying truth of things. All nature was a conscious front of God. A wisdom worked in all, self-moved, self-sure, a plenitude of illimitable light, an authenticity of intuitive truth, a glory and passion of creative force. infallible, leaping from eternity. The moment's thought inspired the passing act. A word, a laughter sprang from silence's breast. A rhythm of beauty in the calm of space. A knowledge in the fathomless heart of time. All turn to all without reserves recoil. A single ecstasy without a break. Love was a close and thrilled identity in the throbbing heart of all that luminous life. A universal vision that unites. A sympathy of nerve replying to nerve, hearing that listens to thought's inner sound and follows the rhythmic meanings of the heart. A touch that needs not hands to feel, to clasp, were there the native means of consciousness and heightened the intimacy of soul with soul. A grand orchestra of spiritual powers, a diapason of soul interchange, harmonized a oneness deep, immeasurable. In these new worlds projected, he became a portion of the universal gaze. A station of the all-inhabiting light, a ripple on a single sea of peace. His mind answered to countless communing minds. His words were syllables of the cosmos's speech, his life a field of the vast cosmic stir. He felt the footsteps of a million wills moving in unison to a single goal, a stream ever newborn that never dies, caught in its thousandfold currents, ravishing flow, with eddies of immortal sweetness thrilled, he bore coiling through his members as they passed, calm movements of interminable delight, the bliss of a myriad myriads who are one. He felt the footsteps of a million wills moving in unison to a single goal. A stream ever newborn that never dies, caught in its thousandfold currents, ravishing flow, with eddies of immortal sweetness thrilled, he bore coiling through his members as they passed, calm movements of interminable delight, the bliss of a myriad myriads who are one. Now, since he put that in the seed, which doesn't require a sheath of the ignorance, it means that it's there all the time, ready to enter. That seeing.
Well, why did you open to that?
Well, if you invoke it, if you have that intention, then you allow Savitri to generate that call, then that flow is there, that sense of flow with things. And then you walk into the garden and you see the flowers differently. Yeah.
So beautiful. It's before this, isn't it?
Yes.
It's in another canto. This is the book of the Divine Lover.
Yeah, it says before that.
Actually, it's in the second book.
Yeah,
the second book. And that is the
book. Yeah, the adoration of the Divine Lover. So when you read that canto, she reveals herself. And I believe that this is the spirit of Auroville. This is the psychic being coming to the front. This is the way of experiencing oneness in everyone all the time. This has the power to dissolve the differences. Energy should follow the image. You know, the image and should bring the energy. And then it's just that which remains. Well, I have done some week-long workshops, and by the end of the week I'm totally roasted. But you can sustain it for a number of days, and it just starts to flow like water. You know, as soon as you open the book, it's just flowing. It feels just like it sounds, only a little more fiery. Yeah, you have this one too. You can get a copy of this one. Yeah, there are a few, but it's very different when you hear it. Shakti, the digital sound is not the same as the physical.
So I could open the book and try to introduce you.
She wants to use it for the
I'm just telling you that it's... There's something about Savitri which is a great secret. It's not the written word, and it's not the recorded word, it's the voiced word.
It's the sound. It's the vibration.
And in a very good recording, you can just catch it on a kind of layer of your perception. But you don't really get it in the body. No, with reading Savitri, you get it in the body. I'm saying the recorded, digital version. You don't really get it like a vibration in the body. So directly, so thoroughly, your understanding is not so total. It's like the difference between reading it silently and reading it aloud. You can catch it, but it doesn't have that direct cellular impact.
I like to read loud just calmly. I would not say it's a general standard, since some people are energetic, so they can hear from recorded things.
No, I can pick it up that way also. It's a matter of degree. We're over time. So next week, I would like to do a little bit from the penultimate canto, Eternal Day, from the prophetic. You know, one of the powers of mantra is prophetic speech. And there's a section there that I think it would be worthwhile for us to retain about the future possibilities, which are set before us in clear marble form. And then the next, then I would like to move a little bit into Ilion, also from the point of view of prophetic speech. And then finally the last day we'll see, we have three more. That's kind of a general prospectus.